I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, much more importantly, Clayton Rippey, world-renowned artist, is our very special guest, part of an ongoing series with Clayton Rippey, and we're touching on so many different things. Certainly his work as an artist, over 9,000 pieces of art out there somewhere of Clayton. Clayton, welcome.
Welcome. Good to hear you, Frank.
No, good to have you, as always. We were just talking a little bit off mic. You're going through artwork of yours. You're looking through different pictures of paintings. Let me ask you, when you have that much of an inventory or a body of work, how often do you see the work? And do you come across things? I mean, you must come across things and say, my God, did I do that? Is that mine, really? I mean, how often do you go through it, and how often do you come across something that you just don't even remember painting?
Well, once in a while I see a painting, and then I thumb through, and I haven't quite forgotten it, actually. When I see that looks really interesting and familiar, and so then I get to thinking about it, and remember when I did it and where I was. But usually when I do a painting from a sketch, I put the sketch away in a big bag of stuff, file them away. But the painting goes, either gets sold or gets stored away or something. And then it recalls other things that went with it. And so if I want to, I can usually look at the back. If it's a painting, I look at the back of it, and it will have all the information of where I was when I painted it, what year it was painted, and everything is on it. So I can reminisce about, you know, things that I was things that I did at the time, and where I was, and where I was traveling, or if I was working on a house, and maybe I'd bought a new house or something, and all of these things come rushing back, and that painting will do it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun to go back through. But the sketches, they're just waiting to be painted. And so I put them in separate boxes according to the kind of sketch it is. And I've got them all labeled. And so I get them out once in a while, like if I'm interested in maybe pattern. And I'll go through maybe the Morocco series. And so I might do a painting, maybe not. Maybe I'll just put them away and go to something else.
Yeah,
but they're there to be used.
There's certainly a lot of inspiration in your life to do without necessarily going back. But I have to believe it. It's not only taking inventory of your physical, assets, the paintings and the sketches yourself, but it's in some ways taking inventory of your career. You know, you look back and you say, oh, you know, I mean, I know that I do that with interviews, or I do that with writing or music or whatever. And I'll, mm-hmm. I'll look back and I'll say, wow, that's where I've come. I mean, I didn't realize that I did this, or I do realize it. I haven't thought about it in a long while. So taking inventory is you know, maybe a little way to tag a catchphrase, but you know, you take inventory of what you're doing and what you've done. You have to see how far you've come when you start looking back. When did the changes happen? I mean, is it every 20 years? Is it every 50 years? I mean, you're almost 95, and you still got a lot of time left. You're in great shape, but you look back and you see something you painted at 25, I can't imagine you look at it as something that you would paint exactly the same way today.
No, but I usually never leave a thought that a lot of painters have a style, like Picasso, for example, had about a couple of dozen styles. Yeah. And one of the things he very seldom ever did was to go back and repaint a style that he had left and gone on to other things. For example, I don't think he, after his experiment with cubism was concerned, he went on to another type of cubism. And then after that was finished, he went on to something else. But he never came back and repainted cubism again. He had fully explored what he wanted to see and what he wanted to do and what he wanted to think about it. And then he just went on to something else. And I think a lot of artists do that. I don't like to let a style go. If I've been doing something, experiments and so on, and I've run the whole thought process through and done as many paintings as I wanted to do with it, I save the sketches that might be left over, and some then maybe 10 or 15 years later, I'll pull a sketch out and do it. And it's kind of fun, too. It's kind of like if you have a record collection and you go back and suddenly you hear an old Count Basie record that you used to play a lot of. And so you play it over again, and it's great to do that. So that's the way the sketches are with me.
Yeah, you got to love it. If you're listening to Clayton Rippey, you have to love getting this insight into, you know, really a brilliant mind and a wonderful talent that this world sees so seldomly. And Clayton Rippey is a world-renowned artist, and his work is just absolutely amazing. Hopefully I could tell you one day to go to ClaytonRippey.com and check out all his work and check out his film and everything else. We're not there yet, but you can Google his name, Clayton Rippey, R-I-P-P-E-Y, and see some wonderful work online, and you see it all there. It's not all in the same place, but if you do a little research, Frank McKay here with the world-renowned artist, and he has been at it for a long time for a young guy. He's almost 95 years young, and it's coming up. It's coming up any day, so I want to wish you a happy birthday coming up if we don't talk to you on that day.
Thank you, Frank.
Any big plans for a 95th birthday? Is it a is there a big celebration? Is it a small celebration? Is it any celebration? Is it?
I don't know. Nobody ever tells me what's going to go on, but I don't really do it willingly. I just let it go.
Now, do you have any birthday memories in? You know, over the course of times, did anybody do something big for your 50th or your 70th or your 60th? Do you look back and see any of that? I mean, you seem like a pretty private guy.
No, I just let them. If we don't do anything, that's fine. If they do something, that's okay. And so they just pile up over the years, and I don't particularly remember anything that is very. Different from any other day, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you know, birthdays in general. For me, I'm 51, and they pass by, and I'm like, all right, that's nice, and you know, want to spend a little time with the family and everything else. But I don't make a big deal. Some people do. You know, I'm using the term take inventory on New Year's Eve, where they take inventory on birthdays, and
yeah.
I know we've spoken to this a little bit. But do you do any of that? Do you ever evaluate how life is?
No, going? Not much. No. Well, it depends on what your whole system is geared to. A lot of people make a national celebration about getting a haircut. So
yeah.
I don't make any fuss of it.
Yeah, well, that's listen, it's different strokes for different folks. But, you know, one of the things that that I have been thinking about more and more, because I've done a lot of different things in my life that really don't necessarily on its surface connect with each other. And somebody once asked me, do you look at your life compartmentalized, or do you look at it as it is one big progression? And I'm starting to believe that I do look at it as one big progression. And, you know, all of the things obviously connect because they're me and I'm in the center of it. But I'm kind of more introspective than a lot of people. I look back and I say, okay, well, that's where this connects and that's where that connects.
I pretty much do that. And I think if you have stuff that you've collected and that you see, like if you have a painting on the wall and you remember where you got that and so on. And I think it's especially true with music. If you've collected records over the years and they go clear back to the beginning of the swing era, you're kind of constantly living in the past and you're replaying things that you liked in high school. And so it depends on which record you pull out, where you're living at the time. And they never grow old if they're good stuff. They always bring out the same thoughts and ideas of what you were doing when you were in high school or college or wherever you were. So music especially is, I think, that way.
I've always been fascinated with your connection to jazz. I love jazz, too, and I love a lot of the same artists that you enjoy and that you appreciate. Let me remind folks once again, Clayton Rippey is the voice that you're hearing. If you're just turning on your radio, your computer, or you're just tuning in a little bit late, Frank McKay here with Clayton Rippey, world-renowned artist. But speak to that. Why jazz? I mean, is there an explanation of why you like jazz beyond, well, I just like it, I've connected with it. Is there a reason? It's complicated for so many people. It's got different forms. It has different levels. And so often, you know, similar to you and to your style of painting. Do you see there being any connection to jazz and what you do, or is it just something you like and you enjoy and it works as a background? Do you see a connection to you and jazz?
Oh, yeah. I was once a musician before I went into art, so it sticks, it stays with you, I think, and you go along with the changes that took place. I was kind of sorry to see the big band system go when we used to have some, probably 10 or 15 big bands playing it in various places across the country on any given weekend. You could tune them into radio and hear them play. But they were constantly making new recordings and so on. But we sort of lost that when rock and roll started. And it's been, I don't know if we even have a big band. I guess we've got the one in the Kennedy Center that's still intact. But when Glenn Miller died, I think it just sort of stopped everybody in their tracks. And there were some Souter Finnegan or a couple of arrangers that came back after the war. And they had a big Souter Finnegan band that the two arrangers had for a while. That they were doing some really interesting experimental stuff by way of arrangements of big band music. And once in a while, you hear something really nice. And so I just go out and buy the record of it immediately because I know it might be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, that's listen. It's just the way it goes. Anybody in particular? Do you have a top five? You have a top three? A top ten? Who are your favorite artists? You like Miles, I believe, right? Miles Davis.
Miles Davis. Oh yeah. I have. Gosh, there's so many really good ones. It's hard to say what your favorite was, or for a given time, you have a favorite. But I like those the ones that are beginning. Glenn Miller was just beginning to really experiment with that big Air Force band when he was killed. So I wish he had kept on, because I'm sure he would have come up with some really interesting things. And it's too bad that so many of the musicians die young, or they get killed in an airplane crash, or we lose them in one way or another. We lost George Gershwin early. And we lost Jimi Hendrix, who was just really into his best stuff when we lost him. And that's happened all the way through, I think.
What about an instrument? Is there an instrument that speaks to you more than anything else? And not just, you know, because you played it, but does something stand out? I mean, there's some people that are, I love guitar music. I play it, and you know, maybe that's why. But I also have a thing for piano. I have a love of sax, very much. But what about you? Do you have a favorite instrument?
I don't know as I do. I think it depends on the song they're playing. For example, trombone, I think, is just an absolutely fabulous instrument. But at the same time, I like sax. There have been a lot of great sax players along the line, and some of the things that Dizzy Gillespie played on trumpet were just unbelievable. And so it just depends on who's doing it and what song they're playing. So I think certain songs lend themselves to certain instruments, and they just fit. And so I don't know. I don't think I have a favorite.
You know, I know you don't like to be judgmental. I don't like to be critical either. But let me ask you about a style of music or a style of painting that isn't your particular taste, not your favorite per se. And again, I hate to concentrate on the negative, but is there any style of painting that you just never got?
No, I just like whatever comes along, and not all the time. I'll go into an art gallery sometimes and just say to myself, this is junk, and they shouldn't be even bothering to mess with it. But usually I give it a good listen, whether it's a good music or whether it's good art or whatever that I think about it. And I think there's room to accept practically everything.
Yeah. See, I think,
not all of it. Yeah. Maybe pieces of it.
Yeah. Well, I love that attitude, and I kind of look at life in the same way. Again, Clayton Rippey. We got a couple of moments left in the segment with Clayton Rippey, part of our continuing series with the great artist and Frank McKay here. Proud to be here with Clayton. Let me point it out this way, and I've said this before, and forgive me if I'm saying it to you again, but I've always said if you took the last most recent number one hits and you played all of them for a group of 100 people, let's say, or a group of, you know, any number of people, maybe 20 of the songs or 30 of the songs I would like. Now, that doesn't mean that the other 60 or 70 or 80 of those songs are bad. They just mean they're not for me. And I think so many people find themselves being the judge, jury, and executioner over art or over music or over whatever. And they say, oh, this is terrible. This music is absolutely terrible. You know, really, I think what we mean is that it's not for me when we say that so often. Because how could all those people be wrong? If there are 80 songs that hit top, number one, top of the charts, it's difficult for me to say, well, since I don't like that, they're simply not good. Obviously, people have different tastes. People have different feels. And if you think about where we are as a society, at this point, we've had a large enough sample size to really get into a little bit of everything. You know, when we were talking about artists that you lost, you mentioned Gershwin and Hendrix in the same sentence, and you could have very easily thrown Coltrane in there as far as people that we lost early. But address that. I mean, there really is a smorgasbord out there at this point in history, and we have a little bit of everything that's come along, and I'm sure there'll be new things coming along. But we do really have a large sample size of a variety of music and a variety of artwork out there. And you know, I kind of look at it as we're an advanced society.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the stuff that where we have lost things are things that never got written because the artist died or they had an accident or something happened to them and we lost them. And so that's where the tragedy is. We've got so much technology now that the stuff that they did get down gets played and gets saved, and people listen to it still. Like with the Gershwins, we listen to all the stuff that he did do. But you often wonder, I think he, what is he, 28 when he died?
Yeah.
Somewhere around that age.
Terribly young.
And you often think, well, if he had kept, had not died, what would he be doing 10 years ago? How much stuff would he have written and so on? If Glenn Miller hadn't gone down in that plane during World War II, he was just beginning to really experiment with the really big band jazz and really interesting ideas and sounds. What would he have done if he'd come back from the war and started a big band and it became a sort of classical concert big band? What would he have done? And Stan Kenton, too, was really getting into some very, very experimental stuff. And so it's the things that he didn't live long enough to do that's the tragedy.
Yeah.
Because we've saved this practically. Well, look at all the classical guys, Rachmaninoff and Stravinsky and Ravel and people like that. We've managed to save the things that they wrote, and then modern orchestras have come along and played them, and we've recorded them, and so we have still have the pleasure of the fact that they were doing this. And so it's too bad that, say, Hendrix didn't live long enough to do what he was doing. He was just really getting started in some really experimental sounds. I keep remembering his rendition of the national anthem.
Yeah, incredible.
In which he made it sound like airplanes and guns going off and so on. It was actually hardly music. It was almost a sound edifice that he made out of the song. And so he was experimenting with stuff. What kind of sounds can he make out of that guitar? And he made tons of them. And what he would have done later if he had lived long enough. I think they saved a lot of his stuff up in the Guitar Rock and Roll Museum up in Seattle, Paul Allen built.
Yeah.
And so that's what we got out of it. He never lived long enough to do really experiment.
Yeah. Listen, well put and well said, as always, Clayton Rippey. Has been our very special guest, part of an ongoing series. We encourage everyone to binge listen to everything that we've done, and there's a lot of it, and you don't have to listen in any particular order, but it will give you an idea of the artist and the legacy. 100 years from now and 200 years from now, I'm sure that that will be in the future, and he's got a lot of time left and a lot of art left in him. Clayton Rippey, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, Clayton Rippey has been our very special guest. And again, binge listen, Google him, and soon we will be telling you where to see a documentary on him in his own words, and you'll be able to see his work there, and you'll see him in action as he tells his tale and he tells his story. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.